You guys can open up to the book of Matthew, the whole book of Matthew. That's going to be the text for the morning. So we're going to be here for a while, so just hang on. We are now in the last book, or the last sermon from our series Kingdom Come in the book of Matthew. This is a journey that's taken, as I said last week, a little over 2 years. We took a lot of breaks thrown in on some different series after I went back and looked at it. We actually took several breaks, but I went back and counted it up. This will be our 85th sermon, our 85th message in the book of Matthew. And believe it or not, that's actually, we could have done a whole lot more if we wanted to really stop and slow down. But 85 messages is a lot. As a congregation, I think you should be pretty proud of yourselves. I think you've learned, you challenged yourselves, you've dove deep into this book. Not every congregation would be willing to let the pastor go and do what we've done. And so as a pastor, I appreciate it. And you guys have been with me every step of the way, and I think it's a big deal as we come to the conclusion of this book. So today we'll finish by doing something of an overview of the book. You can think of it kind of like the final review at the end of the semester, where you go back over everything that you've learned and you remember, oh yeah, I forgot we even talked about that. I should probably remember that. That's kind of what this morning is going to be. So some of it we're gonna beg and borrow from some pictures that we've used over the last few years to consider what the kingdom of heaven is, and hopefully it's going to remind us of some things that God has taught us along the way. So some of this will be things you've heard before. Some of it will be things that you've heard before, but in different ways. So hopefully God will teach us much this morning. So if you'll remember, we started out with this idea that has carried us all the way throughout this book. And I don't know if you want to say that this is the absolute definitive message of the book of Matthew, but it's certainly one of the primary themes that he carries throughout, this idea of the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven, what we defined as the kingdom of heaven, is anywhere where God's rule is expressed through, God's rule and reign is expressed through his will and carried out by his people. God's rule and reign expressed through his will and carried out by his people. That's the definition of the kingdom of heaven. So if you're looking for what is the kingdom of heaven, what are we talking about, what have we been talking about this whole time, that's how we try to put it together. But there's a lot that goes into that, a lot for us to consider. And what we see is that this idea that Matthew kind of sets in juxtaposition against one another, this idea of the kingdom of heaven versus the idea of our own kingdoms that we build, our own kingdoms here on earth, our own kingdoms that we look to, the kingdoms around us and the ones that we hold dear and the ones that war for our attention versus the kingdom of heaven. And all throughout the book of Matthew, we see how Matthew lays that out for us, how Jesus teaches that way. You have this kingdom here, what are we going to do with these two kingdoms? That's the message that he kind of rallies around, continually drawing our attention to the nature of this kingdom and just how different this kingdom is, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, however you want to say that, just how different it is from the kingdoms that we are trying to build. There can hardly be a message more desperately needed today for the church and for the culture at large. Many of you guys, like me, have spent some portion of the last 6 weeks on a beach somewhere. And I'm guessing, especially if you have younger kids, you've spent some, like, time building a sandcastle somewhere in there, right? We talked about this a couple years ago. I'm down for digging a sandcastle. That's fine. That's the only kind of digging we need to be doing, because if you try to bury me in the sand, you're going to be calling the police somewhere or an ambulance, one of the two, because I'm going to have a panic attack pretty quick. I don't do that. I don't do this whole thing where I'm all like, and I can't move. It's not going to happen for me. So I'll do the sandcastle thing. And but the problem with the sandcastle thing for me is whenever we begin, I'm usually like, all right, this is fine. This is good. But then after a little while, my interest starts to wane just a little bit. So, like, I can make it a certain period of time when everybody's into it, and I'll be working hard and have an idea of what we want to do, and then I'll just kind of start thinking about it. You know, everything I'm doing right here is going to be completely gone in just a matter of hours. All this hard work, there's an ocean right there, and I'm here sweating a little mini ocean right here in front of us because I'm burning up on the beach trying to build this sandcastle, and I could just go get in the ocean, and that would be a lot more fun than the work that I'm trying to do. And inevitably, if you have young kids, then you're the one left building the sandcastle while they're doing something else. And so you're building the sandcastle while they're out playing and goofing off, and you're wondering why you're sweating and getting sunburnt in order to build this thing that's going to be gone in just a matter of hours. That's kind of how things go with me. This year we attempted to build a castle. Primarily it was Emily doing the work on the castle this year, but as I went back and looked for pictures to show you of the castle that got built, what I realized is somewhere halfway through, the castle morphed into a monster truck ramp, and the castle itself never actually got built, never came together. But the folks next to us when we were at the beach, they got pretty intense on one of the days that we were there. They found a nice little spot where it seemed like the waves were staying away, and they began to build, and really got something pretty big going. These were probably like high school age kids and a dad that were doing this, so they really were trying to make something nice. And slowly the waves would start coming in, and so they said, you know what, we've got to do something to divert this water. Started digging this big old trench. I mean, it probably would have went around this rug up here. Big old trench to kind of divert the water, and that worked for a little bit, and the water would come up and get real close, and you had one guy with a big shovel there that was on trench duty, and so the water would come in, it would go out, and then he'd have to go through and start digging the trench again. And then as soon as he got done digging the trench, the water would come in, and he'd have to do the same thing. And this kept repeating itself over and over and over. But it kind of worked for a while, but they were trying to stop the inevitable. That castle was going to go down, and there's nothing that they could really do about it. But they tried really hard to protect this castle that they had built, and it was a nice little castle. In a lot of different ways, the book of Matthew, what Matthew does in his book is kind of like that water, those waves that would come up and threaten the castle for our neighbors on the beach. Chapter after chapter, teaching after teaching, Matthew recounts how Jesus' teaching would threaten to topple the kingdoms of all those around him, the kings of King Herod and the rule of Caesar and the little mini kingdoms that the Pharisees and the priests had made, all these little kingdoms that had been built one after another. Jesus' teaching would threaten those kingdoms, just like a wave coming up to challenge that castle that they had built. That's kind of what happens all throughout the book. And we see this over and over and over about how this wasn't just water coming to wash away these kingdoms that these men had built, but instead this was a new kingdom that was coming to establish itself in its place. So it's not like just the castle was going to get knocked down. It's not just like the kingdom the Pharisees had built was going to get knocked down, but there would be another kingdom that would come and be established right in its place. And this kingdom had a new king with new rules and new values and a new mission. And piece by piece, Matthew lays out what this kingdom looks like and what its king is going to look like. You can go all the way back to the very beginning of the book. And so here's what I want you to do with me, all right? Some of this I'm going to go back and I'm going to quote the scripture. Others I'm just going to kind of refer to it. But if you've got your Bible, and I hope you do, this is why it's good to bring a Bible if you've got one, instead of just depending on the screen, because sometimes we don't read straight from the screen. But go back to the very beginning of the book of Matthew, Matthew chapter 1. And if you'll remember, going all the way back to when we did that series at Christmas time, we saw in chapter 1 how Matthew announces the arrival of this king. And he does it by quoting a genealogy leading all the way back to King David, tracing the royal line of this baby that was born and how he is royalty now. This king shows up and immediately, there are two kingdoms at war with one another. This is our first point for the morning. God's kingdom will always find conflict with the world's kingdoms. God's kingdom will always find conflict with the world's kingdoms. So chapter 1, the announcement of the king and the arrival of the king. Chapter 2, you go and you see that the wise men are coming to worship, but as they talk to King Herod trying to find out where this new king is, King Herod is immediately ready to eliminate his rival king. That's how Matthew introduces Jesus, as the king of a kingdom, and the kings of the world are set against him. Even as Jesus is just a baby, you see two kingdoms and two kings competing for the same people. In the earliest chapters, we see how the kingdom of heaven We see how the kingdom of heaven is at war with the kingdoms of the world. So that's chapter 1 and chapter 2. You move on to chapter 4. And when you get to chapter 4, you move on in the life of Jesus and you see the temptations of Jesus. And you move from the clash of the kingdoms here on earth to a battle on a totally different level. Jesus, just before he begins his public ministry, goes away to fast and to pray. He goes away to connect, to seek his Father's will. And as soon as the fast is over, Satan shows up and is ready to tempt him. And we talked about all three of those different temptations, kind of broke down the different pieces of those and how those look today and how those apply today. And then we saw the third temptation. Do you remember what the final temptation was? Look in chapter 4, verse 8. I'm going to read this. Chapter 4, verse 8. And again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." And then Jesus said to him, "Be gone, Satan, for it is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve.'" And then the devil left him, and behold, his angels came and were ministering to him. So, verse 8, the devil took him to a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all their glory. Satan takes Jesus up there and says, "I know you're coming to preach about this kingdom of heaven, but let me show you what I can give you. Look at all these kingdoms here. You don't need this one kingdom. All these kingdoms here, they are under my domain. And if you'll worship me, you can have them. You can have them all." And we talked about how Satan may have been lying there. He may not have. This is Satan we're talking about after all, but I don't think he was. I think he was more than willing to hand all of that over to Jesus and say, "You rule that. You can have it." Because he knows that if he steps down from his throne, from his position of authority as the king in the kingdom of heaven, then Satan has won the battle. Then all these other kingdoms don't really add up to much if Jesus abandons this kingdom. And so you have these two things completely at war with one another. And that's how Satan puts this temptation out. If Jesus steps down, the kingdom that is threatening Satan's kingdom is no more. Without the king, the kingdom is empty. But so long as the king is on his throne, so long as this king is now in the world and actively establishing this kingdom in the world, Satan has a problem. The waves of God's kingdom are now starting to threaten Satan's little castles that he's built. The kingdoms that he's built, that wave is beginning to crash on the shore, and he's recognizing that his trench is filling up pretty quick, and he needs to figure out a way somehow to divert all of this to protect his little kingdom, because he knows if Jesus wants to establish his kingdom, he can't stop him. And so he says, "Jesus, you take all of these kingdoms. I will give them to you." This is how Satan comes after Jesus, and it's how he comes after us. He says, "Here, have this kingdom. Here, build this kingdom. We'll call it your family, but build this kingdom, and that's all you need to worry about. Or we'll call it your job, and this is all you need to worry about. Or we'll call it this, we'll call it that, but you take this kingdom or that kingdom. Spend all your time working on your little kingdom that I give you. And those waves, don't pay any attention to those waves that threaten your kingdom. I'll take care of those. Don't worry about those. I'll dig your trench a little bit deeper, a little bit wider, and I will do everything I can to give you that kingdom. Those waves won't touch it. Just keep building." And so Satan whispers in our ears constantly this song of, "We'll take care of this. We'll take care of this. Protect the kingdom. Protect what you're building. Protect what's yours. Don't mind this other one that's threatening." That's our second point for the morning. Satan will always tempt us to keep our energy on building our own temporary kingdoms. Satan will always tempt us to keep our energy on building our own temporary kingdoms. So Matthew continues telling his story, and he moves on to look at how Jesus taught and the way that Jesus talked about things and the way that Jesus would lay things out, how he began to establish this kingdom of heaven. And almost immediately as he begins to talk, Jesus gives us this segment of teaching, huge chunk of teaching, right at the beginning of Matthew's gospel called the Sermon on the Mount. It's in chapter 5. When you begin reading the Sermon on the Mount, you immediately realize that Jesus has an entirely different agenda in mind for establishing this kingdom. The Jews were looking for a military leader for their Messiah. The man that would write the rules of this new kingdom that would be established, the rules that would mean the Jews were on top and they were taken care of and their political regime was what mattered and what had control. But that is not the kind of kingdom Jesus had in mind at all. In fact, he showed us very quickly what this kingdom values. And what it values is nothing like every other kingdom of the world. So point three this morning, this kingdom's value system is completely upside down. This kingdom's value system is completely upside down. Jesus kicks off the Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitudes. Let's read them together. Just remind ourselves of how strange this has to sound. Just imagine a military leader coming up saying, I'm going to establish my kingdom, and here's what I want out of the men that are going to be with me. And he opened his mouth. This is Matthew chapter 5, verse 2. And he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. None of these things are particularly admirable if you're trying to establish a kingdom with a bunch of warriors. This is not on the list of any general in any time to say, this is what I want my soldiers to look like. This is what I want them to do. This is what I want them to be. This is what I want them to represent when they go out. I want merciful peacemakers. That's the guys I want to take over the world. Nobody says that. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it doesn't make any sense in these kingdoms, in the kingdoms of this world, but in the kingdom of heaven, it makes perfect sense. Jesus lays out the characteristics of what it means to be citizens of this kingdom, and that is what is celebrated in this kingdom. This kingdom isn't built on the backs of force and violence, but it's built on these things that Jesus lays out: giving to the poor, faithfulness to the marriage covenant, eliminating your anger, uprooting your lust in your heart, keeping your word, being free from worry. That is what is the foundation for the kingdom of heaven. That's what the kingdom of heaven is built on. That's the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount. It's built on those type of things. So if you want to hold on to the things that this world values, power, sex, money, strength, making a name for yourself, promoting your own brand, promoting yourself, promoting your accomplishments, doing these great and wonderful things, accumulating things, if that's what you want to hold on to, you're never going to fit very well in the kingdom of heaven. Because the kingdom of heaven doesn't value any of those things. The kingdom of heaven values self-control and kindness and trust and meekness and mourning of all things. That's what the kingdom of heaven is built on. What's first is last. What's poor is rich. What's mourning is blessed. Everything has changed in this kingdom. On every level, the kingdoms of this earth are threatened by this kind of teaching. One teaching after another, the waves crash on the shore and are threatening everything else and threatening to topple our own castles that we have built. Because we have built them on the foundation of all these other things. Teaching after teaching, we just see it wave after wave. Jesus gets closer and closer to toppling our little castles. Move forward to chapters 7 and 8, to the end of the Sermon on the Mount and into new teaching from Jesus. You get to 7 and 8, and you see that not only is the value system different, but the king of this kingdom can do some pretty amazing things. The king of this kingdom can do some amazing things. He looks to those that are outcast and dismissed, and instead of dismissing them himself, he heals them and brings them close. He doesn't play by the rules of the Pharisees or even by the rules of nature, because that's not what his kingdom is built on. He is above them all. They are all submissive to him. This king and his kingdom can break in whenever and wherever they want, and you cannot stop them. He is not bound by the rules of our kingdoms. He establishes his own kingdom and his own rule. And this is what you see when the miracles begin to break in. You see how someone who is a leper, who has this disease on his skin, is bound by the disease that he's been given. And in this world, he has no hope of healing. But Jesus says, I'm not bound by that like everyone else is. My kingdom is bigger and better, and I am over all of those things. You can be healed, and he's healed. You can get up and walk, and he walks. You can see, and they see. The kingdom of heaven is not bound by any of these things. Chapter 10, you keep moving forward. You see the call of the apostles, the call of the 12 disciples, the men that would be his closest friends, and the foundation of the church that he would build. You see them being called to come and follow Jesus, and then he sends them out with this radical message of the kingdom. We call chapter 10, and a big part of chapter 10, we call this Jesus' pregame speech, his locker room speech, to get his disciples riled up and fired up. And he tells them, it's going to be hard, and you're going to be persecuted. And you should know that that's going to come, but you shouldn't be marked with fear. That whoever leaves their family and loves Jesus more than their family will receive a reward. This is our fourth point about the kingdom. The king of this kingdom has a mission for us. The king of the kingdom has a mission. We can't see this kingdom as something that the king establishes and then we just sit around and reap the rewards. That's not the picture Jesus gives us. Instead, the king brings us into the kingdom with the intent of sending us back out as ambassadors with good news of this kingdom and to bring others to be a part of the kingdom. Too many times today, we as Christians can forget this. I mean, we know that we should talk to people. We know that we should go out and talk about this kingdom. We know that this kingdom is a beautiful thing, but we're so busy building our own kingdoms, and we have one foot in this kingdom and one foot in our own kingdom, that we're not sure which one we're more interested in building. And so we press on in our life and are constantly torn by which kingdom demands more of our attention, more of our allegiance. And all along, Jesus is saying, I've sent you out. You've got to leave this other kingdom that you've built behind, because I've sent you out to preach and to teach the good news of this kingdom that I have given you. It's why Jesus ends chapter 10 the way that he does. Look in chapter 10, verse 37. Chapter 10, verse 37. Jesus says to his disciples as they go out, whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. He says this half-in, half-out stuff isn't going to fly in this kingdom. You've got to love me more than your family. You've got to love me more than your job. You've got to love me more than you love yourself. If you're going to be a citizen of this kingdom, it means denying all these other things. Either it's all in for his kingdom and for him, or you're going to find that you've spent a life building a kingdom that doesn't matter, and it's just going to get washed away with the tide. Every teaching, it's relentless. Sometimes whenever we're kind of in the forest, like looking at the individual little pieces, you don't realize how relentless this tide is that Matthew is talking about. Just one after another. Every teaching, every miracle, every mission given, everything that Jesus says is just one more little thing just threatening to take down castles all over the place. And that's point five. The kingdom demands full allegiance. The king and the kingdom demand full allegiance. Jesus continues teaching here over the next few chapters, and for the sake of time, we're just going to have to speed up a little bit, but he continues teaching in a way that shows he's no ordinary rabbi. He's not just a smart guy with a great grasp of the Jewish scriptures. No, he has an authority that no one can understand. The Pharisees come up to him and say, "How are you doing the things that you're doing? We know that you either have to be sent from God or sent from the devil. We're going to choose to believe you're sent from the devil. You are no ordinary man." They recognize his authority as something they have never seen before. And Jesus says, "That's nonsense. It's good that you see that I have power, but you'd be wrong to think it came from Satan. It's come straight from my Father, from God above." The middle of Matthew is just full of story after story of Jesus asserting his authority, whether it's over nature in his miracles or his authority over scripture in his teaching and redefining things. In fact, it's this assertion of authority that rubs all the powerful people the wrong way. And then you begin to see over the course of these chapters, these two kingdoms, or really this one kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, rubbing up against all these other kingdoms in ways that makes everybody nervous. Just one after another, every interaction, you see more and more conflict, more and more friction between these two kingdoms. One story after another seems to kind of up the ante until you get all the way over to Matthew chapter 21. Matthew chapter 21. And Jesus, in what would be an unmistakable show of his kingly authority if you knew the Jewish scriptures, gets on the back of a donkey and rides into town to take his throne. It's not the picture you'd expect for a king on the back of a donkey. But as we've seen, this king values things a little bit differently than typical kings. Jesus knew what was happening. Matthew even quotes the Old Testament telling us that this would happen. Matthew 21, verse 5. Matthew quotes from the Old Testament. He says, "Say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a beast of burden." He comes into town. And we see story after story of how the waves are beginning to just crash all around to everybody. And people are freaking out. And so they think, "We've got to dig these trenches more. He's going to wipe us out. He's going to threaten us." Herod, the Pharisees, the high priest, they all kind of get in cahoots and say, "We've got to do something about this guy." And that's when they start to scurry around. They find some ways to keep these castles from being toppled. They scheme, they accuse, they bribe. They get Judas to betray him. And that's when this ultimate moment of conflict seems to come to a head. You know, that big battle scene from like the Lord of the Rings where you've got one group here and one group here and they're just like, this is what's, it's about to go down. That's what you expect from what you've seen with all of this is you expect this giant battle. Let the clash begin. Judas betrays Jesus. The soldiers come to arrest him. Peter pulls out the sword, cuts off the soldier's ear, and you think that it's about to happen, and that's when Jesus says, "Knock it off. Put away your sword. This is not how we're going to do things. If my kingdom were of this world, we would fight, but my kingdom is not of this world, and so we do not fight. My kingdom is not from this world at all. There's something much, much bigger happening here." And at this point, it seems as though the scurry and the franticness of the Pharisees and the high priest and the kings around Jesus has worked. They've deepened the trench enough to keep the waves out, and it looks like they've withstood the crashing of the waves of this kingdom of heaven. Jesus would be put in a robe, crowned with thorns, beaten, put through 3 mock trials, and then executed with a sign over his head that said, King of the Jews. And for all appearances, Satan's kingdom was safe, and the kingdom of heaven had come up short. But that's not how Matthew ends his story, praise the Lord. Instead, the king is murdered, but Matthew's final chapter, you go all the way to Matthew chapter 28, the very final chapter. And we see that the king did not stay in the tomb. There's no monument for us to go and see today. You can go to a place and you can say, this is where they think maybe Jesus was at, but they don't know because there's no bones to look at. Because he's not there anymore. The king has risen. He got up and he rose again. And in so doing, he declared that the kingdom of heaven had triumphed over all. Every kingdom of this world that could claim dominion over us had nothing. Even death lost its dominion. Death could claim no victory over us any longer because our king had come and conquered that. There were no tyrants that could not be beaten. There were no kingdoms that could withstand this king. This world's empty promises could not stand under the weight of this new kingdom. The castles came crashing down as this wave of a miracle crushed around them. But the thing is, though, even though this kingdom has already been secured for us, and it has, even though this kingdom has already been established, and it has, even though the king is alive and reigning today, and he is, all the castles of this world, all the kingdoms around us have not been wiped out just yet. Every day, people all around us, and all too often every day, we are hard at work building our castles. Satan is still promising that his kingdom, or that your kingdom, is better than the one that Jesus offers us. And he still tempts us and says, just keep working hard. I'll protect your kingdom and your little castle that you've got here. I'll work with you. Just listen to me and avoid going over to this other kingdom. You don't want to listen to that. Just keep working on your... That's too risky to leave this work that you've got here to go over here. He's going to ask you to do so many things. You can't go over here to this king. Just keep listening to him. And then one after another, people listen to that song and they keep building their castles. But Jesus gave instructions to his disciples. He gave instructions that he would return, that he would judge the hearts of each and every man, and that he would know and he would seek to find their allegiance. Who is your king? He will ask each and every one of you. And at that moment, when that happens, your answer has got to be that your allegiance is fully in him. Not, well, I really enjoyed hanging out in your kingdom whenever I went on Sunday mornings and got to know some people, but for the most part, I spent my life building my kingdom. You have got to abandon your kingdom and chase after him, bow to the king, and worship him. And this is point 6. This kingdom of heaven is forever. And your kingdom will die. It will crumble. It will fall apart. It will not stand. It will not remain. The kingdom of heaven is forever. And so you've got to decide, where are you going to spend your life? Building a kingdom that will crumble and die, or as a citizen of a kingdom that will never die? No matter how deep we build our trenches,
And some of us build some really deep trenches. We build some really great castles and some really great protective measures. We put a lot of hope in a very false sense of security. We have a lot of comfort that we can protect our kingdoms financially, physically, tangibly. All of those things will fail us. You can't earn enough money to keep your kingdom around. You can't work out enough to physically keep that kingdom from falling apart. You can't marry well enough. You can't raise good enough kids. Your kingdom will fail. Your kingdom will be obliterated. So the way I want to end today is by going back to the Sermon on the Mount, back to Matthew chapter 6. I'm going to go back to Matthew chapter 6. I want to ask if you can pray the same prayer that Jesus taught us to pray. The same prayer that Jesus laid out for his disciples. Can you pray that prayer today? Full-throated, with no abandon, can you offer up that prayer today? Not out of memory, not out of obligation. With your heart, mind, soul, and strength, can you wake up every day and pray this prayer? Matthew chapter 6, verse 9. Jesus says, pray like this. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Your kingdom come, your will be done. Is that really what you want to see today? Do you want to see Jesus' kingdom established and grow person by person more than you want to breathe today? Is that what you want? Is that what you value? Is that the kingdom you're living for? Can you pray, Jesus, I want to see your kingdom come. I want to see your kingdom established as though it were in heaven, it is here on earth. That's what I want to see. That's the question in the book of Matthew for us. Which kingdom is ours? And which one are you spending your life investing in? And which kingdom are you more interested in growing? Yours or his? As we leave today, as we wrap up this series, don't let that question just kind of hang with this pregnant anticipation. Where do you stand on this? Who is your king? And what is the kingdom that motivates you the most? Will you pray with me? Father, thank you this morning for the message of the kingdom. Thank you for how you give us this incredible message. That we can look back on your word and the gospel that Matthew has written, and we can celebrate Jesus.